Geico makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in 3 requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through Geico. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Daredevil Born Again. I'm Born Again. I'm Alex.
I am fresh out the body on the earth, born again. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about episode 3 of the show, The Hollow of His Hand. So say hello to some spoilers, because we're going to recap it right now. This is the continuing trial of Hector Ayala, the White Tiger, who's been accused of killing a police officer. We know he didn't. Matt Murdock knows that he didn't do it, but the cops are all aligned against him. And in this episode, despite them getting the informant, Nikki Torres, to the trial, Nikki clearly has been cowed by the cops, lies on the stand. So Matt pulls out one last gambit, which is revealing White Tiger's identity, even though he very specifically told the judge he didn't want to do that last episode.
Very recently, yeah.
Hey, it works, though, because in a very tense moment,
we call it a short-term win.
It's a short-term win, because he does get not guilty, but despite Matt telling him you can never be White Tiger again, by the end of the episode, he has suited up to go save his neighborhood. And we end with a shocking moment at the end there, where somebody dressed as the Punisher shoots him in the head, killing him. Meanwhile, on the Fisk front, a lot of stuff going on with the whole mayoring thing, but mostly we're focusing on the Vanessa side of things, where she is still working the crime angle. Why are Mayor Fisk, ostensibly, as far as we've seen, is trying to keep his hands clean, except for his bloody knuckles, which seems to indicate something else is going on there.
Maybe he's playing Bloody Knucks.
Maybe he's playing a game of Bloody Knuckles. We honestly don't know. We'll find out. Pete, you seem upset this morning, which I know we're taping this in the morning, and you wake up. It's just a trial to wake up every morning anyway, but perhaps it has something to do with the end of this episode, I'm going to guess. And you must be bummed out, because we have finally found out definitively the Punisher is a killer of heroes. As we always knew he was in the comics, we always knew he was a bad guy. Now he's a bad guy on the show as well. Is that what's upsetting you here, Pete?
Well, or did you have like a weird breakfast? Is it something breakfast-based?
Yeah, maybe wasn't it? I've seen you when you have spicy stuff in the morning, and it is not good. Did you have a spicy burrito? Good.
No, I'm having a great time with my breakfast of late, but okay. Thank you.
Should we be doing a podcast on your breakfast instead? Because I want to do something positive.
Let me say, to hear someone say they're having a great time, I got to know what they're having. You got a new nut in your oatmeal or what?
I want to like the show. I want to love the show. I want to be having a good time. And it just feels like they're playing with my emotions in such a fucked up way that it is the roller coaster that happens on this show is insane. And man alive, it is just it's hard. It's really hard because the ending was such a kick in the nuts that I'm like, God damn, the show hates me. Marvel, why do you fucking hate
me?
Then, you know, because we had a little incident last time and I was like, Zelvin, I hate you. And we kind of last night we were doing a live show and you brought it up. You're like, oh, man, remember that thing? And I was like, hey, Zelvin, anything you want to say to me? Because you watch ahead and you just looked at me with those dead fish eyes and we're like, nope.
Jesus.
And well, I still, because you also in the same show yelled at me for 5 days. Old spoilers to about that I had said to people you don't know on the internet. You are a person I know on the internet. So if I was going to be like, hey, man, an hour before the show airs, real quick, here's what happens at the end, you would never talk to me.
It's so hard because I know how much fun you're having with me being tortured.
No, but Pete, you've said definitively you don't want to be told. And it's like That's we true. Said, if there was a bus speeding toward you and Alex was the saw it coming, he wouldn't say, Pete, get out of the way, because you wouldn't want that.
And
you
I wouldn't publish an article about the news 5 days later because I know the Pete death spoiler window is a full week.
Yeah,
see, right. Alex went viral for that Pete got hit by a bus article.
It's funny that you're bringing up a bus because we both know we were walking outside of a New York Comic Con and Zalbin threw somebody in front of a truck or maybe it was a bus.
I didn't throw him. I pushed him. All right.
I feel like now I'm on trial and I'm the white tiger here. So, you know, it's not going to end well for me.
I'm sure there'll be the same sort of heroic outpouring when you're on trial, Pete.
Here's the thing. Pete, I know you talk about how this show is like hates you and all that.
Yeah.
This show is literally doing its job. We're making you feel emotions for these characters. It's not like this show just happened. They constructed the show to do exactly what it's doing to you. You should be happy and impressed.
Yeah. Marvel just rolled the cameras. They're like, can you believe we're getting all of this? This is crazy, this footage.
Wow, the fact that guy got shot right on camera is
feels like we should report this. And they're like, no, spoiler window. We'll put it up a year later on Disney Plus.
Unbelievable.
Yes, I 100% agree with Justin. This is putting on us on an emotional roller coaster ride. It's really good. It's really well done. It's really effective in terms of what it's doing. And this
the frog sounds at the end, I was like, God damn, that's a kick in the pants.
Is that how he pronounces it? Yeah.
Well, I don't know how to pronounce it.
I thought that was wonderful and really super sad, like we talked about the last episode, just on the level super of sad. Kamar De Los Reyes passed away of cancer after filming these episodes, to sort of like the double hit of, oof, we just watched White Tiger be executed on television, but also this is the last footage we're going to see of this actor having just this quiet moment that you could sit in at. There's a really good article on Slate, I want to say, by a writer named Joshua Rivera, where he talks about letting you sit in that moment, letting it be this tribute to a Puerto Rican character, but also a Puerto Rican actor, that really, really affecting at the end there.
I mean, even in the beginning, if we could just talk about White Tiger a little bit here, the story that he tells about the frog, and I was getting emotional there. Like it was getting me there. And then playing at the end, I was like, you fucking sons of bitches.
It's really good. It's also impressive because the great emotional beginning to this episode, hugely impactful end. And in the middle, Matt Murdock, in his big closing statement, says the words, why wouldn't he have had his magic amulet? The crux of his argument. And I was like, whew, that's a hard swallow. And they somehow are able to take us to that level of grazing nonsense and bring it back to a big emotional hit. And that is amazing.
Him working the courtroom is hilarious. His whole thing about the black eye and being like, you got to have fast hands, was hysterical.
Just being an asshole for no reason.
Yeah, just
I would love to have a lawyer's opinion on the show because I have to assume it's complete nonsense. Personally, I don't care because it's working really well as a courtroom drama, to the point that I think this is the first time in I don't remember how long that we got to a verdict. And I was like, geez, this could really go either way.
I'm very nervous right now. Yeah. I agree with you. I was
the
really
stress I was feeling in the courtroom was I was like, and I just pause it and take a breath and just be like, this isn't real. Just take a breath.
Well, and I think the reason it's working, and we again talked about this, I think, in both of the previous two episodes, is the show's doing a really good job of very blatantly but very expertly weaving the story of White Tiger, Fisk, and Matt Murdock together, so that every single thing that Matt Murdock is saying in defense of White Tiger, he really is kind of saying right back as himself. And there's a line I wrote down. The mask doesn't make the man, and whether Hector Ayala is wearing the White Tiger suit or not, he's a hero. This is something he's like, me, right? That's me, right?
Yeah, too, right? Everybody?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's really well done.
And it goes to the experience. This is, I don't know what the full experience is of everyone working on this show, but it just feels like there's a steady hand here where they just know that you don't have to over-explain things. And sometimes you can just start with something that feels a little goofy at first and get to a really impactful moment quickly by doing the goofy thing up top. My example in this episode is when he's in the bathroom and that cop with the black eye comes in.
Yeah.
And Matt's like, hi, I'm blind. I can't see you. Are you here? Who am I talking to? I was like, what is this? And then like 30 seconds later, they're having this great response to the end of the last episode. And I was like, yes, worth it. Even though that was some goofy shit on the front end. And they are just able to get in and out quickly. And it's really grace. There's a lot of grace to it.
It's based almost directly on, I'm forgetting the artist, I want to say Michael Gatiss, but Brian Michael Bendis did a 2-issue arc in Daredevil about White Tiger. So I think that probably helps as a framing device. But I also think this really points, not to blow it out too much, but thinking about the difference between, say, Daredevil, the 2003 movie, and this, where that was in a time where people were like half embarrassed, half into comic books. They're like, we got to sell this to the fanboys. Here, this feels like, yeah, we respect comic books as a form, and we can lead into the goofy shit like Magic Amulet, like Matt being like, ooh, I'm blind. What's going on here? But at the same time,
is this a bathroom or the newspaper stand?
But using that effectively for drama and understanding and respecting the audience that, like, yeah, this can be part of this world and we can kind of go forward from there. So, again, I think this is really working for me across the board. What else? One thing I wanted to throw out before I forget, just because I saw this bopping online this morning. In the, I think it was the closing argument, or just there's a montage where
the
they're talking.
Douchey rebuttal?
What?
You're talking about the douchey.
Not Hawk. I know you love Hawk. You're Hawk Tua is what you are, right, Beam?
What the fuck are you doing right now?
Just throwing out a reference with absolute nonsense. The thing where they're going through like all the character witnesses and talking about all the things that White Tiger did. Kirsten McDuffie goes up and talks about this one very specific report from a cop that Matt is like, and I have all these other reports, and he starts to list names, and he's like, Officer Reyes, Officer Grant, Officer Wong, Officer Morales, and people are online like, oh shit, Officer Morales, he's talking about Jefferson Morales, Miles Morales's dad here, and sure, maybe, but I really kind of think like they just had a list of easy to say, ethnically diverse officer names that Charlie Cox.
I don't know, man.
Say.
Montoya, you know, is an officer that you hear a lot in the, you know, the comics.
Yeah,
and
for
stuff
sure. Like. And usually they're throwing out Officer Montoya to talk about Rene Montoya. Very specifically, who's going to show up later in this stuff. But like, do you think Officer Wong is a undercover Wong the Sorcerer Supreme?
Oh, that would be sick.
Look how happy that
Wongers!
Just made Pete. Look how happy that made Pete.
I mean, they're not going to bring in Jefferson Morales or Jefferson Davis or whatever you want to call him. And they're definitely
so you're
not
saying
gonna
Wong is
Morales.
Definitely not going to show up?
Wong's definitely not going to show up. Also, Officer Grant could be, what was his name? Grant from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. using his first name as a last name.
That's the show where everyone's dying for this to cross over to. I mean, it's sort of like what we were talking about with the Spider-Man animated show, where it's like they literally have just name tags on people that just have comic book references, but there's no real reason for it, I think. And like, that's fine. I think it's cool to do that. I think it's the obsession. We can't get too obsessed with it because that harms the actual story that they are telling.
Yeah, I feel like if you're worrying about that, if you like that, awesome, have fun with that, consider it an Easter egg. I personally don't think it's an Easter egg, but like you're saying, I think it's the wrong thing to focus on in that moment in the scene.
I wish in the way that regular eggs are scarce and more expensive, I wish that would translate to the Easter egg economy and we could cool it a little bit.
I also think, I mean, we'll see how it spins out, but I think this show, for the most part, is being very calculated with its references and making sure that they matter for the show. Like how, very specifically, as we're building here, and we can talk about the end of the episode, because I know that upset Pete a lot, like he's already said, but they've very specifically been showing Punisher tattoos on the cops, building up to this moment to the end where we see somebody in a Punisher vest, but we don't see their face. I think it's pretty clear that they're playing with the idea. We know Punisher is going to show up on the show, but the way Punisher is in the comics and the way Punisher was previously in Daredevil, the TV shows, is he's a character who, like, has almost a supernatural sense of who is guilty or not and only kills people who are guilty. Does it make sense? I don't think so. But I don't think he's going to be somebody to be like, yeah, now I'm back and I'm killing heroes on the show. It's got to be one of the cops, and that's got to be how it's going to happen.
Well, I would ask you, Pete, do you think that is the Punisher?
What's well, the thing percentage? Is we saw these kind of like tattoos that look like a amalgamation of the Punisher symbol. The vest that we saw looked very legit, looked like something that the Punisher actually wore. So that's why it's a scary moment. But I would like to back up the truck a little bit.
Wait, before you do, can you answer?
Keep the truck. Answer the question, sir. Answer the question. You're on trial here.
And do you have your magic amulet on?
I don't. I don't want it to be the Punisher. And
do you
I
think it
thought
is?
It was at first and freaked the fuck out and had to calm down a little bit and then thought, like, no, they wouldn't do that. But then I was kind of like, well, Marvel's being a real dick right now to me, so maybe they would, because this show
Mr.
is insane.
Mr. LePage, if you keep prevaricating on the stand, I'm going to have to hold you in contempt of the court. Answer yes or no.
You can't handle the truth. I just think
you can't
that...
can't handle the Pete.
I don't want it to be, so that's where I'm going to stand.
Wow. Way to dodge
the question.
I thought
it was, though. I thought it was, and it got really angry, but then I'm like, I calmed down, was like, no, it can't be. It can't be. They wouldn't
do that. Let me point to a clue, I think, that points to what probably is going on here. They intercut this scene of Hector getting back into costume, patrolling the neighborhood with Fisk being interviewed or basically just like speechifying to BB Urich.
He's on the BB report. That's a huge guess for him and her.
That's
the problem that they made was they played that song that is from Man on Fire, and it is anytime someone's about to die, that song plays. So as soon as I heard that song, I was like, oh no. Oh, the White Tiger.
Well, the thing that I wanted to mention specifically is almost right before he gets shot.
Creasy!
Almost right before he gets shot, intercut with that is Fisk saying the rule of law must prevail. And then Hector gets shot in the head by somebody that looks like the Punisher. I think that points very clearly. Yes, the show wants you to be like, oh no, is that the Punisher? Is he killing people? Is that how he comes back? But I think they're also very clearly indicating there is a connection between Fisk and what's going on here.
Well, and I think a connection between these officers who are taking the law in their own hands, because I think what I like about what they're setting up here is Fisk and the city is like mad at vigilantes, but we have cops who are becoming vigilantes under the auspices of the law to go do deal out their justice. So everyone's sort of doing wrong, and it's going to be a just heightened battle between them. And I 100% believe that that is not Frank Castle at the end of the episode. And because I think what's cool about that is that puts Frank and Daredevil on the same side, so they can actually work together in a way that will push on that theme, sort of the strongest theme from their previous interaction in the earlier seasons of the show, of you're one bad day away from being me.
Mm-hmm. And I also, I know I brought this up before in relation to this, but I love that they're following this just because of the real world implications of it. There are cops in the real world who idolize the Punisher, put the Punisher label on their cars, on their uniforms, probably getting tattoos as well. And that's what this is riffing off here. And that's bad. That is bad to the point that Marvel has had to change the Punisher symbol and pretty much, for the most part, excise Frank Castle from the Marvel universe, because It is real-world cops using the excuse of the Punisher, a fictional character, to kill people and amp up their violence. So the fact that a Marvel TV show is seemingly taking that head-on is really laudable, and I'm nervous and excited to see where they're going to take it next.
Yeah, we'll see how it all unfolds. I thought it was hilarious when Fisk was like, give me the baby report. And his assistant was like, we can get the times. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. Was that Sheila saying that? Sheila, the only sane person on this show?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. She seems like she's just getting more and more frustrated with the way people are doing business on this show.
Yeah, it really is.
It's not getting any better.
Yeah.
I did. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, let's talk about the business aspect. Obviously, we spent a lot of time already talking about the Daredevil White Tiger thing, and we could certainly come back to that. But how are you feeling about the arc here with Vanessa and Wilson and everything going on with crime in New York? Because that is one of the places we start with Devlin, I believe it is, stealing a truck and killing two men, which sets off a series of events.
Yeah, I like the way that the Fisk, that Thick Wilson is very much like, Vanessa, we have to stop this. We can't be doing crime. I'm the mayor. But yeah.
Look at the way I'm politely eating my food as I'm talking to you.
And let's definitely sit on the opposite end of the table, like a rich cliche. Shouts to the original Batman movie. But the way that he's like, I can't be involved, but I'll send my number one henchman who's in every photo with me to do the crimes. He'll handle the crimes. Not me. It is strange. And I also, I'm curious how that, because we get the scene where
she sent the henchman in this one, though. Because we get this lovely moment in the therapist office where the therapist is just taking a bathroom break, I think, and then they start talking to each other and getting real, which was nice. That scene was just so awesome, where it was just kind of like them laying their cards out, like, hey, we can't be doing this, as Justin is saying. And she's like, well, actually, I am doing this. And also, there's that painting. I could clean $200,000. Like, so she wants to be in this. And he's like, that's beneath us. So it's a really kind of a conflict of interest that happens there. And she thinks he is punishing him, which is an interesting word to use. But he was like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm just trying to eat my food like a fucking snob.
Well, he was eating another egg white omelet, so good on him for, you know, working on his weight
heart,
and his health.
Heart health.
For sure. Lots to unpack in everything that you just said in that ramble. Buck, who is the second in command, has a very telling line towards the end of the scene there where he says, I don't work for the mayor, I work for the man. I think you're right, absolutely, that like he's been photographed with him all the time. But that certainly points to, again, that there was a lot more going on with Wilson Fisk than we are actually seeing on screen, which I really like a lot. Like, I like the fact that they're leaving information gaps because we know he's a bad guy. We know it's going to go wrong, but maybe it's already going wrong is the implication there.
Well, and I think the bloody knuckles, and we get a great sort of match cut between his bloody knuckles and Matt's bloody knuckles.
They're the same.
Yeah. And I think that's a very telling thing. We had them in the diner scene, the first episode. It's like, they are the same. They've been through this already and they're on different paths, but it's all leading to the same destination of them punching each other. What do we think Thick Wilson's doing to get his bloody knucks? Is he out there just punching regular
people? I think he's doing one of Pete, you don't know this because you're not in New York, but downtown is like a dangerous place where any alleyway, and there are a lot of alleyways in New York, you can get into a high stakes bloody knuckles match for money.
Yeah.
Especially flipped, because before you guys were on the high ground of there's no alleys in New York City. Now you're all alleys in New York City. I mean, come on, you flip floppers, pick a side with this. I think that Fisk is like painting a wall white and then just punching the crap out of it until there's blood everywhere. And then he kind of paints over it again.
I love the painting aspect of that. Well, as we learned at the beginning of this episode, the Red Hook docks are fucked. Right down not there by the Lobster Pound, by the IKEA. Really dark
place. Isn't there like a pink berry or something down there too? Like a
That left maybe 20 years ago, Pete, so I don't know when the last time you...
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Here's my question for you, Justin, because I was definitely trying to game through this, because, like, first three seasons of Daredevil, they're like, Hell's Kitchen is a total hellhole. And mind you, they had an explanation, which is the Battle of New York left it wrecked at the beginning of season one. But by season three, they were pretty much treating it as like Hell's Kitchen is its own city where all the crime happens.
Yeah.
They got away from that in the first episode, started to talk about gentrification, widened it out to the whole city, which I think is great. But now they moved on to, as we're saying, Red Hook being like the hellhole of New York, when it also definitely is not. Where can they possibly point to at this point in New York that would work and track?
Well, one more notch in why Red Hook's a bad choice is where the Queen Mary and every cruise ship that comes to New York docks is in Red Hook. So not the most dangerous place. Would you say East New York? Crime in New York is way down from like in the past. So it's a tough thing. And I wouldn't call it super centralized in any particular area, but I think East New York is sort of the catch-all for that right
also
now.
Also, the like sketchy docks that they were at looked really nice. You know, it was well lit, a very clean area for that interaction there.
I mean, I think they were just looking for something that doesn't have, they could shoot that doesn't have like a lot of building going on in the background, so it doesn't look weird. But yeah, it's just that doesn't work. And I know it's a fictional world and it's fine, but
Red Hook sounds scary if you don't know that it is.
Ooh, like, what is it? A pirate place with a Red Hook?
It's where like head of marketing people live with their families in old fisherman brownstones.
Yeah. If you want to get some like really cheap meatballs over the IKEA, that's go to Red Hook.
Oh yeah.
They also do actually have a pirate themed mini golf place called, oh my God, what is it called? Shipwrecked. Check it out. Very good. Mm. Very fun.
Oh, wow.
Have a birthday party there, Justin.
That I will. Yeah, for Justin. Myself. Yes. For me, myself, an adult.
Yeah, 100%. What else is going on in the episode?
I like the shell game they were playing with the kind of lead witness where, they were thinking he was in the back of the van, but then they did the old switcheroo and he was in the cab. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
That was well done, I thought, as well.
Yeah, and I like Cherry. There's not too much going on with him dramatically, but having him as the old guy who's like, I guess I got to help out.
I'll get you some drugs.
He was saying, I read that the actor said that he was inspired by, oh my God, what's the name? Is it Quint, who's the captain in Jaws?
Oh, yes.
The captain, that's what he took as inspiration.
I don't think it's boat.
Quite that pronounced, but you definitely get that like, well, here I go again, type energy from him.
And it's good. And it's funny that Daredevil has to have his, like, man on the ground, the classic Jake from Jake and the Fat Man, which is a very old reference.
Wow.
But great show when I was a kid. It's really working right now. I'm curious what's going to happen once Matt inevitably throws on the old half horn mask and gets out there on the street.
Can we talk about Matt playing with his horn in the courtroom? I mean, that was a little weird, right? I mean, don't play with your horn in a courtroom. You know what I mean?
He's got
sure you're alone, but like, you know,
is your issue that he's not saying his classic line, "Do I make you horny, baby?" From the Daredevil movie 2003.
Yeah, that's. Nope.
It's not. Well, I actually like that. I think it's nice. It's him like being like, I have ways of handling this that I could be doing now. And instead he's having to do it the real way, the courtroom way. Mm-hmm. And as we saw here, I think White Tiger being killed at the end, it's not working either. Like, he's going to have to go out on the streets as Daredevil. And I think he knows it. And that's why he's stroking the horn.
We're only three episodes in, but I've already seen some reaction online of like, hey, how long are we going to keep him out of costume? I think based on what you guys are saying, I know where you fall anyway, but how are you feeling about that? Is that working? Do you need him in costume right now? What's your take?
No, that fight sequence he did in the kind of empty apartment building where he yelled at the end was great. I don't need more Daredevil right now. I mean, the tension and all the other stuff going on right now has been enjoyable. And, I don't know if we're going to get it for a little while because we got to deal with this Punisher stuff. So, but man, Yeah.
I think it's coming soon.
Oh, it's definitely.
If not the end of next episode, the one after.
It'll be interesting if the Kingpin and Matt both break at the same time, or if one breaks first, or what's going to happen with that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably get the way that they've been doing this so distinctly parallel for the first three episodes. And as a side note, it's amazing the amount of tension they get off of the show with Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio appearing in zero scenes together this episode.
Yeah.
That, like, you feel them from opposite sides of the city glaring at each other, which I think is just great. But, like, yeah, they can keep it going as long as they want, because, like Pete's saying, there is so much tension in this episode and so much tension wrung out from, like, what's going on with Wilson? When is he going to go bad? And, ooh, when is Matt going to put on the costume and absolutely lose it? I like that. I like that period that we're in right now. And yeah, I don't know if they will be able to maintain the same tension once they are what we know they are going to be.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to move on and talk about the BB report.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I was going to move on too. But BB report. Let's go.
I also was going to talk about the BB report. So go ahead.
I like these scenes, but it does make me think, is this the only internet based news show shot on 16 millimeter film? Because the way it looks like a archival footage from the 1970s. And it's good. It's cool, but it's just causing to question so many elements.
How about the pizza guy? Is like, oh yeah, good versus evil. The streets are crazy out here. Yeah.
I just still don't have a sense of what it is. Like, she's just doing bad on the street stuff with the most general questions possible. And we're also being told she is the most powerful news reporter in New York City. Like you said, it also doesn't seem to be shot for TikTok or Reels or anything like that. So
yeah, I keep looking
on YouTube or what's happening.
I keep looking for you guys in the background. I mean, you guys say you live in New York, but I don't see you anywhere on the BB report. So it's hard to believe.
You know what?
Yeah, you're going to see me. Yeah. You're going to see me pretty soon. I'm like, crime? Yeah, that's here.
Used to be in Hell's Kitchen, a lot of it, but. Yeah.
I bet she posted on a password protected Vimeo account because they have better video production qualities and just across the board. She can send it out as a reel.
Today's BB report won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. This is pretty cool.
Ari Aster has shown some interest in the BB report.
All right. Let's talk about the.
All right. Enough of your bullshit, says old man Pete yet again.
Let's talk about the ship here that is the therapist and Matt. And, Matt's trying to have
her
a
name?
Nice.
What's her first name? Add or last name, Pete.
Matt's trying to have a nice moment. And she's like, oh, you brought a Falky. I was wondering when you were going to start talking about him. And I was like, oh, man, that's a classic therapist move. But
it's
also
when you're in a sexual relationship and you think about consent, there's a third person you need to think about. Foggy Nelson.
Foggy.
It was kind of weird to see him. He didn't want to say his name, and then he did say his name. And it was
like what her, happens. By the way, her name is Heather Gled, just for clarification. But
nobody asked.
What do you think happens if Daredevil has to go to like the Bay Area and there's sort of the temperature drops sort of precipitously overnight?
He's going
to
start crying. Is what happens is as soon as he sees it.
He's like, oh god, it's looking a little foggy out there.
Yeah. What about when he goes to the supermarket and he goes to the refrigerator aisle and he opens up the door and he's like, oh my god, oh again, the door is foggy.
Oh, that's why.
Or he's tuning his radio dial and he
somebody puts him in a headlock and he's like, oh no, I'm in a full Nelson.
Anything. Yeah,
everything. He sees him everywhere.
He sees him everywhere,
except for him being blind, but otherwise he sees him everywhere. I really like that conversation. I like this relationship. I like that they're treating him normal. You don't like it because you want him with Ken.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Karen Page.
He'll get back to
She's turned the LePage on that.
Yeah, here's the thing. They're doing
is that your
job.
Sister, Pete LePage? Is that your sister?
No. I'm not related to the made-up character, but thank you.
Well, to be fair, though, you are fictional, right? There's no way you're real.
Depends on who you ask.
I knew it.
I like that they're giving them a real adult relationship where they can have conversations mere moments before she is clearly killed by somebody to motivate Matt. But, you know, while she's here, it's nice.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. That is definitely coming down the pipeline here. But I sort of want to see – this relationship has had very little romance to me. Mm. It's been very – like, this scene was like therapy. I was like, oh – I could see a little more nice stuff here, but it's right to like, hey, so tell me about your dead friend. And it's like, well, that's not how relationships work.
Anything else from the episode we should talk about? Anything else you want to call out?
Let's see.
I want to mention that the therapist's name is Heather Glenn and the cop's last name is Powell, yet neither of them are played by Glenn Powell.
So close. We're so close. Weird.
He's going to show up, though.
I think so. It's an Easter egg. It's an Easter egg for Glenn Powell.
Yeah, that's fair. Someone thinks that on the internet. Mm-hmm. Shouts to that person. That's just sad to see the Punisher turn to crime, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, other than the fact that Marvel hates me, I have nothing else
to say.
It
just sucks when a man who murders almost indiscriminately. You know?
That's not true.
Yeah, it's almost not true. Mm-hmm.
Why don't we move to our vision board then and talk about what we want to see or hope to see in episode 4. Justin, what's on your vision board?
Well, we've had 3 great episodes. This episode didn't have a lot of the things we expect in a Daredevil show, yet was still great. I feel like they can keep that going for one more episode before they have to tip the scales into some punching and stuff. What do you mean?
Wait, what are you saying?
I'm saying I think we can have another sort of turning up the temperature on all the characters before we get a big fist fight, Daredevil fighting someone, Punisher showing up, guns blazing, that kind of stuff. We have another episode, I think, before the melee. I think we will get a tease for it. But we had Matt yelling at the end of the 2nd episode. In this episode, the actions are going to make him even more upset that happened. And I think we get one more notch to ratchet him up before he flips.
Pete, what about you? What's on your vision board?
Well, we got to get the Punisher reveal of whether that he was there or not. So I don't know if they show that kind of thing again and show that it wasn't his face, or if we see where Frank was or whatever. But I need that off the thing before I can kind of enjoy the show again. So I need to know that that wasn't the Punisher. And I hope they don't make me sit through a whole episode before they kind of give that to me, because that would be really hard to do. And I don't know if I want to do that. But I mean, I can't really deal with anything else until I know that that wasn't the Punisher.
You mean in your life?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything's on hold.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, boss, can't come into work today. They haven't revealed what's going on with the Punisher.
Oh, yet. I've called out. Yeah, so we're good. We're clear.
He's got
for
another
the week.
Punisher flu where he can't.
I agree with both of you guys. I do want to see them deal with the Punisher thing. I also just want it to continue to be episodic and procedural. Like, if we got another case of the week trial in the next episode.
It's too soon.
No, that would be fantastic. Like, I love that structure. I'm really enjoying it. Like I said, it was super tense with the trial. So if they can keep that going, that's really cool.
Do you think Kingpin is punishing his wife? Do you think there's some truth to that?
Punishing her emotionally?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think he knows that and doesn't want to admit it? Or do you think he does actually believes himself when he's saying, I'm not punishing you?
I think there's lots of stuff going on with Fisk that we don't know about yet. There's certainly an undercurrent of something that happened in the intervening years between them that we don't really know the answers to yet. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's 2 things going on, right? Like, I think there's the level of he always has thought about himself as a businessman who is putting New York City first. That was present in the 1st season. That was present in the 3rd season. But he's also a master manipulator who is pushing people for years behind the scenes. So I don't think we put that to the side. I just think we're not seeing those scenes on screen. And eventually, whether it's like a flashback episode that puts the whole thing together or just in the text or something like that, we're going to start to see, yeah, he's on the surface like, I'm the good mayor of New York, and that's what he's doing, eating his egg white omelets and taking care of himself and taking care of the city. But I don't think any of that stuff has got away.
Well, yeah, and I think Vanessa's like, hey, we got into this to do crime. You want to go be mayor now? Like, that's he's the one who changed. And I think he's sort of forcing her into a place that she doesn't want to be and was never part of the deal.
Yeah. So we shall certainly see. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Daredevil, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Pete, were you upset when Foggy had a crush on your sister? Wasn't that sort of weird?
Dude, she's not my sister, bro. What the fuck?
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.